Well, well, well. You were expecting Cake Wolf, perhaps? Not today, my friends. Welcome to Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. My name is Darian. I gave that guy the day off. He isn't looking too well. I think all this monsters crap is finally catching up to him. So I told him to take the day off. You're stuck with me today here in Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. We're talking a little monsters here for Cake Wolf's 31 Days of Monsters. A few things on monsters before we get into this. Not that good, right? Am I wrong? You're going to tell me Monsters was a great show? It was fine. It was all right. But all around, mostly misses, I'm going to say. I'm sorry, okay? Got two episodes to talk about today. The first one is from Season 2, Episode 8, and it came out in 1988. It's called The Demons. This one's not very good either. I'm sorry. But here's the thing, man. You got to take these horror anthology shows with a grain of salt because, number one, you can't get all that much horror into 21 minutes. So especially, I mean, at least like on HBO, Tales from the Crypt, they had, they could at least show boobs and throw in some extra blood and shit like that. You're not going to get that on Tales from the Dark Side or Monsters. Or The Twilight Zone, which was probably more sci-fi. But the thing about Monsters is that I don't think they ever really wanted to be scary. They just wanted to make these funny, ironic tales of, with horror elements. And that's exactly what we got here. We're talking about The Demons. This one stars Richard Mull and Jeff Silverman. It's directed by Scott Alexander. So we start off with like a demon type of a dude in a demon cave type of an area. He's played by Richard Mull. You'll recognize him from Night Court, House, a few other things. Whenever you need a guy that's like 7 feet tall from 1985 to 1996, you got yourself Richard Mull. And that's what we got here. I think he's supposed to be a demon, but really he's just a dude in a robe with like a giant butt on his head. I don't know what to tell you, man. But the thing about this dude is that he's actually trying to conjure himself a demon. So you're thinking to yourself, you're a demon. What do you need another demon for? And since you're already a demon, why don't you just go next door or call one of your buddies? And then there you go. But anyway, he's like drawing the pentagram on the cave floor and getting ready to go. He's got all the ingredients. As he's getting ready, we're going to cut to somebody else. Guy by the name of, we're going to call him Irwin. I forget his actual name, but we're going to call him Irwin. He's an accountant, and he lives in a suburban home with a wife, and he's drawing up a new, or he's not an accountant, he's a insurance salesman, and he's drawing up this new insurance plan that's going to really rock the insurance world. And he looks like your typical insurance salesman, you know, bald, glasses. We didn't get into it, but I would be willing to bet that his last name was Hirschenbaum or something like that. Poindexter, even? I don't know. Anyway, he's all fired up, and basically what we're finding out is that this dude is obsessed with insurance. He's like pacing back and forth and drawing up things. His wife is pretty hot, and he's completely ignoring her, and she's wanting to fuck him, but he's not interested because he's too busy with doing insurance-y stuff. So she comes in with a sexy negligee on. His wife wasn't that unattractive. She's pretty hot, I'd say. And she's like, Irwin, I want you to make love to me. And he's like, well, first take a look at this this quarterly plan I drew up for the fucking whatever. And she's like, that's it. I'm going out. Okay, great. Now we cut back to our demon in his cave. He's got his pentagram drawn up, and he's laid out all of his ingredients, all of them except for one. He's looking for something called Skrill, which he doesn't know what it is, but he just grabs something else and puts it in its place. And then he goes about summoning his demon, and then Irwin gets like teleported to the demon cave. So now the demon guy thinks that Irwin is a demon. So he's like, hey, you demon, I summoned you. You need to grant me one wish. And Irwin's like, I'm not a demon, dude. I'm just an insurance guy. But he's like, shut your foul mouth, demon. I know that you're a liar. I summoned you, so I will. I demand my one wish. I want 10,000 pounds of Drass, something called Drass. And Irwin's like, well, I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't have 10,000 pounds of anything. And then the demon guy's like, well, if you refuse my request, then I'm going to put you in this cage of pain. So Erwin's like, ah, shit. All right, I'll get you your dress. Just send me back. So he sends Erwin back. Erwin starts like going through his house trying to figure out what Drass is. Erwin's time runs out, so the demon summons Erwin back to the demon cave. So the demon's like, hey, where's my Drass? And Erwin's like, I don't know what the hell Drass is, amigo. So how about you either give me a clue or you find somebody that actually has some fucking Drass? So the demon, Richard Mole, is like, well, in your world, it's also known as gold. So Erwin's like, oh, gold. Okay. Oh, shit. Where the fuck am I going to get 10,000 pounds of gold? So the demon's like, shut your foul mouth, demon. Return to your realm and come back here with my Drass. Erwin's like, well, okay, there. Wait a minute. I ran it by my home office in Chicago, and they said that you got to help me with this Drass thing. They need to certain paperwork that for you to fill out. So basically, Erwin convinces the demon guy to give him a copy of the spell that you need to summon a demon. So I don't know what Erwin's original plan was, but basically he sends Erwin back with the copy of the spell. So Erwin, I think in a Rob Paul to pay Peter type of a move, Erwin's thinking he's going to summon his own demon to get him the 10,000 pounds of gold to give to the original demon to get him off his back. So that's the basic plan. Erwin's there in his suburban living room, and he's got his furniture all out of the way, and he's drawing pentagrams on the floor. And he's got all the ingredients. Again, he doesn't know what the hell Skrill is, though. I don't think anybody does. So Erwin just grabs a chicken leg and puts that in place of the Skrill. Okay, so he does his demon summoning ritual, and he summons a real demon. This guy shows up, and he's red, and he's got horns, stuff like that. Erwin's like, hey, dude, I need you to get me 10,000 pounds of gold. Stat, you got yourself 1 hour, so let's make that happen, okay? So the demon, who is played by the nerdiest guy ever, you'll recognize his voice as soon as you hear him. He's like, okay, I'll do my best to get you that gold, sir. I'll be right back. So Erwin's like, all right, you got 2 hours. Go get the gold. So he like banishes the demon that he summoned, and he's waiting around, and his wife shows up. And apparently she just got done with yoga class. So the wife comes in. She sees the furniture all rearranged. She sees the pentagram on the floor, and she's like, Erwin, what the fuck is this business? Erwin's like, I got a new hobby I'm working on here. And she's like, I don't know. And he's like, look, I'll smooth it out. I'm going to make reservations at your favorite Indian restaurant. It's going to be great. And then the wife is like, okay, I'm going to my other yoga class. So, I like this new change in you, you know, with the reservations at the Indian restaurant. So Erwin's like, yeah, great. Okay. So he summons the 2 hours goes by. He summons his demon back. The demon shows up, and he's got, like, something covered in a blanket with him. And Erwin's like, hey, you got it, man. You got my 10,000 pounds of gold. That's awesome. And the demon's like, yeah, well, I couldn't really find the gold, but what I did do was summon my own demon. And what we got here, he's going to get you your 10,000 pounds of gold, so that's great. So then he pulls the blanket off the whatever it is he's covering, and you see he's got Richard Mole in a cage. So basically, we've gone full circle here with the demon summoning. The Richard Mole summoned Erwin. Erwin summoned the nerdy demon. The nerdy demon summoned Richard Mole. And now it's like a crazy demon summoning gold money-grubbing triangle we got ourselves here. So Erwin's like, oh, you got that guy, huh? All right. And his demon is like, yeah, you know, if you just ask him for the gold, I'm sure he can get it. He's a real demon. I just sell insurance. And then Erwin's like, oh, I sell insurance too. And basically they have like this diatribe about insurance and quarterly policies and who's underwriting what. And him and his demon become best buddies. And Richard Mole is still stuck in the cage. And that's pretty much the end of your show there. Oh, this one. It's not very good, okay? It's ironic, I'll give you that. It's pretty silly. It's 1988, so But again, my friends, if you're looking, if you're going to monsters and you're expecting to actually be frightened, you're looking in the wrong place. Number one. Number two, there's just not enough time. There's not enough budget, and there's not enough freedom to really do like a horror anthology. So what you have instead is monsters. It's got horror elements with all this ridiculous demon summoning, but it's not scary. It is kind of ironic in the end, so you got that going for you. I know Cake Wolf usually does a scale of 1 to 5. I'm going to give this one a solid 1.5. I was going to go 2 for a second, but I talked myself out of it. The reason I'm going so low is because it's not that good, man. I'm sorry, okay? The demon effects were ridiculous. This whole demon accountant thing, it's silly. I didn't find it humorous at all, although the ending was kind of got a little bit of a chuckle out of that. But it's just not that good. I'm sorry, okay? What do you want me to do? I said I was sorry. The things I would change about this, I would make the demons a lot more frightening. I would ditch this whole accountant thing. I would make Erwin, first off, I wouldn't call him Erwin, and I wouldn't have him obsessed with accounting. I keep wanting to say accounting. I wouldn't have him obsessed with, insurance. What I would do is make Erwin a drug addict, and how would I do that? I would have the demon summon him, and I would actually have it check. Now, hang out with me on this. I think I'm onto something here. Richard Mull, whatever you want to call that guy, tries to summon a demon and gets Erwin the drug addict instead. And, I don't know, maybe, the drug addict, instead of summoning another demon, goes on like a liquor store robbing spree. And basically what I would do is have him find out that he actually is a demon instead of this ridiculous love triangle of demon crap. So I would darken this way the fuck up. I would have the demon summon Erwin. Erwin's a drug addict. He's trying to get the gold. So he starts robbing liquor stores, and like with each liquor store that he robs, he gets a little more demon-like. You know what I'm saying? Like his eyes become red after the first one, and after the second one, his ears get pointed, and after the third one, he like gets horns, and he thinks he's just trying to save his own soul by robbing all these liquor stores, and maybe he has to kill a few people in there also. How about that? I should be writing for monsters. That's actually frightening. And I don't think it would pass network TV in 1988, but it's still better than this ridiculous love triangle crap, right? I don't know. Maybe it's not. Forget it. Forget the whole thing. I'm giving it a 1.5. It's not that good. Let's talk about the next episode, shall we? So now we're moving right along to episode 9 of season 2. This one's called The Reaper. This one stars Barbara Billingsley and George Wallace. You'll recognize Barbara Billingsley as June Cleaver from the original Leave It to Beaver. And George Wallace is the original Rocket Man from 1912, I think. We're digging deep here. This one's directed by Jean Patineau. I know I'm mispronouncing that, but it's French, so there you go. This one's actually based on a story by Robert Bloch, so this one's a little bit better, I think. Start off in a retirement home / nursing facility where George, playing a guy by the name of Robert, is just being admitted. And it just so happens he's being admitted as they're having this big birthday party for a old lady that's turning 103 years old. And she's in a wheelchair and she's struggling to blow out the candles, and that's great. We're going to meet our head nurse here. I think her name was Shelley. She's played by Barbara Billingsley. Now, you can do the math here, my friends. Barbara Billingsley, circa 1988, she's got to be pushing 70, probably 80, I don't know. So what she's doing, taking care of other old people, I have no idea. She should be a patient in this place. Regardless, she's going to be our head nurse. Robert is being a right pain in the ass. He's like, I don't want to be here. Don't put me in a room where anybody died. I hate these places, and I hate you, and oh, fuck everybody, I'm going to die. Typical old man, right? So she's like, well, you know, this is a retirement home, sir, and people die here every 26 minutes, so good luck finding a room where somebody hasn't died, so we're just going to put you in a room and that'll be that. So they get him situated in a room, and that night the doctor comes by, Dr. Morton. So it's like midnight, Dr. Morton shows up, Robert's sound asleep, and he's like, I am Dr. Morton. And then Robert, like, looks up and he realizes that this mysterious quote-unquote Dr. Morton is actually the Grim Reaper. So you get, like, a quick flash of the Reaper. The Reaper actually looked pretty cool in this one. He wasn't like a skull, but he had, like, a cool white face thing going on, kind of like a, almost looked like a hockey mask in a weird way. But then he had the skeleton hands and the robe and the sickle, scythe, all that shit. So he shows up and he's like, it's time for you to go, Robert. And Robert starts begging and pleading for his life. And basically, he makes a quick deal with death that instead of taking him, he's going to fashion three other people. He's going to kill three people to spare his own life and give him some more time. So I don't understand the logic in that. Robert's like 105 himself, so why not just take the easy way out? But whatever, he's scared of dying, I guess. So Robert needs to kill three people in order to continue living and appease death. So he's like, oh, geez, cut to the next day. Him and Robert and Barbara Billingsley are playing cards, and they're starting to strike up a friendship. Robert, after accusing Barbara of cheating at cards, goes on to read the paper, and then Barbara's like, hey, let me see that paper when you're done. I want to read Maury's, whoever Maury is. He's got like a weekly column, and she wants to read it. And Robert's like, okay, whatever. These stupid columnists, they're going to teach you how to live your life. And she's like, no, Maury's a good guy. I wrote him once, and he actually wrote me back. Handwritten and everything, probably licked the stamp himself. So Robert's like, licked the stamp, huh? Ah, got his number. So Robert writes a letter to Maury, the columnist, puts a self-addressed stamp envelope in the letter, and puts, like, rat poison on the part that you lick there. Okay, so that's great. Cut to a couple days later, there's another newspaper article, and it basically entails how Maury's assistant died of poisoning. So, and she was like a young girl. She was like 22. She had her whole life ahead of her. So Robert's kind of broken up about that. He didn't actually kill the person he wanted to. He actually got that guy's assistant. Poisoned her with the rat poison on the envelope there, which is actually pretty imaginative. Like, if you're looking to take somebody out and you know they lick envelopes, yeah, go ahead. Do it that way. So there's kill number one. Good job, Robert. Now we get some more, lead into this budding romance between Robert and Barbara Billingsley. She's, like, looking after him, and they're playing cards and watching TV together and stuff like that. Pretty soon, Dr. Morton shows up again, and he's like, hey. Apparently, Robert, at this point, is the only one that can see Dr. Morton, because he, like, walks behind Barbara Billingsley, and he holds up a skeleton hand and gives him, like, the two fingers. Like, you need two more dead bodies, you bastard. And then he walks out. So, Robert is watching this, he's like, oh, okay. One of the other nurses starts freaking out, like, screaming and freaking out about something. We realize that there's a bee inside the home there, and this particular nurse is afraid of bees. So that's pretty scary stuff. And then Robert's like, afraid of bees, huh? I got you. So we cut to, like, later that afternoon. Robert has set himself up an elaborate bee trap that looks exactly like something out of a Wile E. Coyote cartoon, where he's got, like, a little dish of water, a jar propped open with a stick, and a string tied to the stick. Because I'm 100% sure this is going to work. But since this is monsters and it's 1988, of course it does. A bee flies into the trap, and he captures the bee, and he's like, oh, I got you now. So we don't see exactly how this transpires, but apparently he somehow puts a bee inside some cake, and then when that heavy-set nurse comes to collect his food tray. He's like, I saved the cake just for you, baby doll. And she's like, oh, thank you so much. I love cake because I'm a great big fat person. Well done, writers of Monsters. So she eats the cake, she has an allergic reaction, and she dies. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty terrible, but at least that's two kills on the book for Robert. Now we get some more lead into this romance between him and Barbara Billingsley. Basically, at one point, he's like, hey, I'm a rich man. I could put you up in a house anywhere in the world, and you know, you could live the life. You don't have to work anymore if you marry me. And she's like, oh, Robert, I don't think so, but thanks for the offer. And she walks out. And then he gets taunted by death again. And then, like, the next day she comes back and she's like, oh, that big fat nurse died of some kind of an allergic reaction. We're all going to go to her funeral. And Robert's like, I'm not going. I hate funerals. And she's like, oh, by the way, I've been thinking about your offer. I will marry you and you can, you know, we have to make arrangements for me to quit this job. But I'll marry you and then we can, you know, live happily ever after and all that. And Robert's like, oh, I'm so happy. And he's walking Barbara Billingsley out to her car where she's going to drive everybody to that nurse's funeral and death is there waiting. And Barbara Billingsley's like, oh, this is Dr. Morton. He's new to the home here and he's going to be, you know, helping us out today. So Robert and Dr. Morton start talking and Barbara Billingsley like has to go to the bathroom. So Robert's like, hey, you can't come for her, you bastard. We have a deal. And death is Robert. Dr. Morton's like, hey, dude, the deal is between you and I. It has nothing to do with her. Her number came up. So I'm going to, you know, see to her untimely demise here in a quick few. And Robert's like, no, you can't. You can't do it. So basically, Robert makes another deal with death to supply him with another dead body by midnight that night. And he'll spare Barbara Billingsley. So Robert here, the old guy, is turning into quite the serial killer. So he now has till midnight that night or his new fiance is going to bite the bullet. So just as they're leaving, Robert walks past that 103-year-old lady and he's like, oh, she's going to die pretty soon anyway. So cut to that night, like 10, 11 o'clock, Robert sneaks into her room thinking he's going to smother her with a pillow. But she, like, wheels herself out from the shadows and injects Robert with poison. And she's being wheeled by Dr. Morton, and she's got, like, glowing green eyes. Robert's like, you bastard, you can't kill me. And he's like, I'm death, I can do whatever I want. And I've been making deals with Mrs. What's-her-name here for quite some time. How do you think she lived to be 103? And she's like, ah, and she's got these glowing green eyes. And Robert's like, fuck you both. I'm going to go get the nurse, and she's going to get this poison out of me. And he's like, oh, yeah, go ahead and try there, old-timer. So Robert, like, staggers out into the hallway, collapses, and dies. And that's the end of Episode 9, Reaper. This one is slightly better. This one isn't that bad. Scale of 1 to 5, I'm going to give this one, like, a 4. I'll give it a 4. I think that's fair. I'll give this one a 4. Sure, you know, it's kind of horror based. You got to think about, you know, who's gunning for you because they made a deal with death. How would I change this one, you're wondering? I would darken this one right the hell up. I would go ahead and have Robert make a deal with death at the beginning, but then I would have death drop off like a bunch of semi-automatic weapons. It'd be like, yeah, This is how it's going down, dude. I realize it's probably too soon to make that statement, given the events of Las Vegas. But hey, you know, it's a horror thing. We're trying to horror this up. So that's what I would do. And then I would have like Robert battling with his own conscience as to whether or not he wants to shoot up Shady Acres or not. I don't know, man. It's fine. You know, what are you going to do? It's Monsters. As far as like an actual decent story goes, I think this one's probably one of the better ones that I've seen. So it's definitely better than The Demons. That was just silly, right? All right. Well, Cake Wolf's going to be back tomorrow with two more episodes of Monsters for you. That's going to do it for me. As you stick with it. Don't judge Cake Wolf by this episode. This is me throwing this together on the fly so he could have a day off. So there's that, number one. Number two, he'll be back tomorrow. Number three, if you want to hear me continue to make an ass out of myself, check out the regular Padded Room podcast where me and my screwhead friends do it on a weekly basis. So that's it for me. I'm going to lead you out with the Monsters opening theme as usual. And yeah, Cakewolf will be back tomorrow.
Honey, it's family hour. There must be something on. Oh, wow! Candy critters!
Oh!
Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show.
Shh, it's starting.